continue this presentation from National Treasury team. But before we do that, our committee secretary, Darren, is a King Rugby player. So he has been selected to the Western Cape Parliament Rugby team. He'll be going to Japan during the World Cup. I can see some of you salivating. I wish I was also playing rugby. but for the members, it will be very busy during that time. But just want to try to remember that we're supposed to have another secretary who's not there. They promised that they were going to appoint him or her, and that hasn't happened. So we're being trying to see if who's going to stand in his place when he's away. Not unless they decide that the whole committee goes to go to Japan. We can decide to have our meetings there. And we ask for just an additional man from National Treasury so that we can continue doing our work wherever we are. Dr. Mam.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. My presentation is on the structure of the budget document. Before I go into the presentation, I think I should highlight the speech that was at the Senator. The Senator is at the speech, the budget review, the estimates of national expenditure, the judicial revenue bill, the appropriation bill, the medium term budget policy statement speech, as well as the medium term budget policy statement.
Sorry, this speech to the
The adjusted estimates of national expenditure, the divisional revenue bill, the adjusted appropriation bill. These are the budget documents that I will be referring to. If you go into slide 28, every year in February, the Minister of Finance will table before Parliament the budget speech. The budget speech, he will deliver it verbally, but also there will be a documentation that goes with the speech. He will also table the budget review. That will be in February every year, the 30th of February every year. The minister will table the budget speech, the budget review. That will go together with the estimate of national expenditure, the division of revenue bill, as well as the appropriation bill. This process is governed by the Money Bills Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Act of 2008, which requires that after tabling of the national budget, in terms of Section 8, Subsection 3, committees on finance must, within 16 days or as soon as reasonably thereafter, must submit a report to the National Assembly or the National Council of Provinces on the fiscal framework and revenue proposal. And in terms of Section 9, Subsection 3, the divisional revenue bill must also be passed within 5 days after the adoption of the fiscal framework by Parliament, or as soon as possible. Thereafter, in terms of Section 10, Subsection 7, the Parliament must pass the appropriation bill with or without amendments within 4 months after the start of the financial year. In this case, this year will be the 1st July 2019. What goes into the budget review? The budget review comprised of different chapters. We have a chapter on the economic outlook. We have a chapter on the fiscal policy. A fiscal policy chapter will talk to a consolidated fiscal framework and government fiscal stance over the 3-year period or the medium term. A chapter on the revenue trends and tax proposals. A chapter on the consolidated spending plan, which outlines government spending projections over the next 3 years by function and economic association. That one will refer to the role of public finance in particular. The one on consolidated spending plan. The division of revenue chapter, which outlines the division, the national revenue to the national departments, the provinces, and the municipalities through the equitable share, as well as spending by provinces and municipalities. And there will be a chapter on government debt and contingent liabilities. That will be the role of ARM division. The contingent liabilities, it will talk to the implicit contingent liabilities as well as explicit contingent liabilities. The implicit contingent liabilities will refer to your role as the fund. the exposure that you have from the local investment funds, if they incur deficit, they run into a very difficult financial position. Morally, so would you compare to bail them out? So that will be classified under implicit condition liabilities. Then your explicit will refer to the guarantees for the that you give to ESCOM. Then there will be a chapter on the financial positions of public sector institutions. The next slide, slide 31, the division of the revenue bill will provide the equitable division of revenue that is raised nationally among the national, provincial, and local governments. The division of revenue bill will comprise of the equitable share allocation, as I've indicated, the conditional allocation to provide different disparities, that will include the conditional grant allocation. And the conditional grant allocations will also go with conditions attached to those grants. The methods related to all allocations, the duties and powers of municipalities, provincial treasuries, and the national treasuries. The appropriation bill, the link to section 9 of the appropriation bill, of the money bills amendment procedure related matters act, a report of the committee on appropriations to the house that proposes amendments to the main appropriation bill must, in respect of each amendment, indicate a reason for such proposed amendment. So we must demonstrate, or there must be a demonstration of how the amendment takes into account the broad strategic priorities and allocations of the relevant budget. There must be a demonstration of the implications of each proposed amendment for an affected vote and the main division or program within that vote. There must be a demonstration of the impact of any proposed amendment on the balance between transfer payments, capital or recurrent spending in an affected vote. Set out the impact of any proposed amendment on savings delivery. Set out the manner in which the amendment relates to prevailing departmental strategic plans. Reports of the Auditor General, committee reports adopted by the House, reports in terms of Section 32 of the PDA, annual reports, or any other information submitted to the House or committee in terms of the spending rules and or requests. When providing a motivation in this context, it will be necessary to bring the reports from other committees like the SCOBA, the Portfolio Committees, the AG, the SCOA reports, strategic plans, annual plans, so those reports must be linked together. I think we have time if I want to explain what is the appropriation bill, and I think I will return to it again to say that the legislation that provides for the appropriation of money by Parliament from the National Revenue Fund in terms of Section 213 of the Constitution and Section 26 of the PDA. To appropriate money from the National Revenue Fund by vote and main economic classification for the requirements of the state for the financial year and to prescribe the conditions for the withdrawal of funds. Spending is subject to the 15A and the provisions of the appropriation bill itself. For transfers to sub-national governments will be your provinces and the municipalities. The 2019 Division of Revenue Bill also contains provisions in terms of which specific spending must take place. The committees on appropriations, the SCOA committee, may not consider amendments to the appropriation bill prior to the passing of the Division of Revenue Bill. Any amendments on the appropriation bill must be consistent with the adopted fiscal framework and the Division of Revenue Bill passed by Parliament. Prior to the 2019 appropriation bill being promulgated, departments will incur expenditure in terms of Section 29 of the PDA, which makes provision for spending before the annual budget time. I think this relates to the questions that were asked by the MPP earlier on, to say spending that can be incurred before the budget time. So the departments, they have up to the end of July, that expenditure may not exceed 45%. Of the 2018-19 financial year annual budget. So I think this answers your question.
Thank you.
Okay. And the structure of the
sorry. the reference 2018-2019 is the correct one. Not 2018-19 of the previous financial year. That's the reference that you're using.
The structure of the appropriation bill. The bill is divided into, is divided by vote and by main division. Division is other than the division or program. It means the same thing.
I now know my colleagues. I could see the body language.
Sure.
Thank you.
The purpose is set out for each vote, program, and transfer and subject to a national department within a vote. Allocations are categorized in terms of the current payment, which will include your compensation of employees, that is your salaries, your goods and services, your, that will be under your OPEX, your interest and rent on land. The allocations will also categorize in terms of transfers and subsidies, payments for capital assets, payments for financial assets. Allocations that are marked with a single asterisk refer to specifically and exclusively appropriated allocations, including but not limited to all board and national departments, compensation of employees, appropriations, and conditional grants. This refers to when they talk about specifically and exclusively appropriated amounts, they talk about those amounts that can be, that can only be used for that particular purpose and nothing else, unless the purpose is amended by or in terms of an act of parliament. So for instance, conditional grants, the money that are used for conditional grants can only be used for conditional grants and nothing else, unless the parliament directs otherwise. I think I've somewhat covered slightly infrastructure to this specifically and exclusively appropriated amount. Talk to your conditional grant, your COE, compensation linked to capital goods, all funding allocated to national departments within a vote, all funding allocated to your constitutional institutions, majority of these institutions will include your section or your chapter 9 institutions, your social grants, that is social security, your contractual membership fees to multilateral institutions such as the IMF, your commitment that binds the National Revenue Fund. Currently, we have transferred to BRASA for their rolling stock fleet renewal program. We also have contributions to Sandal for the GP program. Other documents that form part of the budget documentation, we have the ENE, the estimate of the national expenditure, which is a publication that provides comprehensive information on how the national government boards and entities have spent their budget in the past, how they plan to spend their budget in the future, and on resources generated. ENE is a self-contained detailed publication, and we also have it online. It contains a detailed information for each board, for each national department. We also have an abridged ENE publication, which is an explanatory memorandum of the appropriation bill. The abridged ENE publication only has information that is related to each national board and selected public entities. Therefore, this abridged ENE will also explain the intent of the appropriation bill, which is a legislative motion that authorizes the government to spend money. It also sets money aside for specific spending purposes. This means that if the appropriation bill is the budget itself, but the ENE will just give you a breakdown of information that is in the appropriation bill. I think we have covered this slide, that slide in terms of what the ENE is all about, but in summary, I can say that it's just a presentation of the financial outcomes of the past three financial years and the revised estimate of the current financial year and the estimate or expenditure estimate of the current 3 years. That will be your MTEF period. And we also said that the information is presented to the government board, that is your government department, in accordance with each old budget program or division structure broken down by economic classification. We also have the information in an Excel format in case the secretary is interested. And each old chapter includes a short analysis of the spending trends and performance. This will talk to your non-functional information in terms of how has been the spending trend of a particular coach. And it will include information on personnel and information also such as the establishment structure, the number of programs and the salary levels. And it will also include department entity budget information. And on the information that will be presented in the EAC. In terms of by function or by economic classification. So economic classification it will go broader, unlike the function where it will just highlight the program only in the board. So in terms of the adjusted estimate of expenditure, this is a process that follows every year in October, where a Minister of Finance will table the mini budget, what you call a medium-term budget policy statement. The statement will go together with a speech, which the Minister will deliver in Parliament every year in October, also the 30th of October every year. This will go together with the adjusted estimate of national expenditure, the division of revenue bill, and the adjusted appropriation bill. I came to the completion of that presentation. If there are any other any questions.
Thank you. I would like to take a bite. Honorable Zambo, Professor Rupin. Okay, let's go.
This one. I'm thinking about that. At what stage do we set aside that appropriate fund to set the debt? Do we consider this as part of the 3-year MTF program, or we look at what happened at the end of each financial year and see what is it that we have in the kind of informal payment gaps. Are we structured in internal sense?
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jay. I just want to ask about particularly capital expenditure and infrastructure spend. When I was in the province and in local government, we used to get, you get the big budget book, department by department by department, but you get a separate book that was specifically estimates of capital expenditure, and you go through that and tell you for each department what projects are going on, infrastructure projects are going on, and capital projects, and exactly what the amount was budgeted for that. And it was a 3-year rolling project, and the year before, you'd see over 3 years what the life cycle is. Give you an idea for every infrastructure project, what life cycle was for that project per department. And it was a very powerful tool in understanding infrastructure plan versus infrastructure spend. I'm not sure if we get that for national government, and if not, why not?
Thank you.
So Judah will build the infrastructure work quickly. So honorable member, when it comes to debt service for every quarter, we have to estimate what the debt is going to be to get to the last stop of the debt. Because it's not only been affected by spending and revenue, it's affected by inflation and exchange rate. So every time we do a growth forecast, we we have to focus the services across the life cycle of the debt. So the debt servicing cost is a direct charge on the national revenue fund. So before the money is even split according to the three spheres of government, the debt service cost money is already out. So we pay the debt cost before we even pay the department. So that's always out, and we know the estimated amount of the service cost that we're going to pay over the 6 years of the debt.
So it doesn't come to us.
Because it's a direct charge, so it doesn't matter what it is, we have to pay the charge.
In judges and court of first charge. Honorable 13, it's in the budget review, they quite there a number of annexures. You see, this is not our, this is not the budget office owns the document, so we don't need to explain anything. But now that you've got infrastructure is an extra D. That's public sector infrastructure, so there's also public entities, and then there's also an E for the PPP projects.
Sorry, Jim, not to belabor the point, but I see this only includes the major infrastructure projects. Now, a minor infrastructure project might not run into billions of rands. It might be a school that's 200 million rands. That's not listed here. And it might not, at a macro level, be a large amount of money, but for us in our constituencies, it's a big project. And we don't get that consolidated. This is what I'm speaking about. And provincial governments, we used to, for every single department, no matter how small the infrastructure project of the capital spent, it would be detailed. It would tell us what the location of it, and you could go and decide where you're going to do your oversight. And I think that's probably a report that's lacking. I'm not saying it's your fault. I'm just saying that it would be nice if that could be produced as part of the budget process going forward.
So for each national vote in the E&E chapter, there will be an annexure at the back that puts all the infrastructure, big and small. And then obviously in each province they will have the provincial one. And so maybe the annexure obviously we also they worry about the size of the document. So in fact the major one. Let's see, you will find that not the projects won't be listed in that amount of detail in the division of revenue. But there should be sufficient information. And this is the abridged. So it's got less information in it than what is on the website. So maybe we must just package a thing so that you can find those things.
Thank you. I'm sure you can see there is the around what's happening around earlier. You can see the next step. So I think whether it comes to us or not, I think something that, as I said, it would like to be taken on board because it forms part of what we do. Not necessarily in applications, but as part of parliament. So I think we, as part of our induction, the fact that so that we can ask the questions that we want to ask from that. Who's having it? It's Adam Julius. Last time you said you are. Thanks, Will. All members, I think we'll have a second bite on that. Responsible for our own education. And also just to understand what is happening in that space.
Honourable members, my name is Gillian Wilson and I'm responsible for the administrative services sector. So the central government department, like the presidency, DPMP, DPSA, National Treasury, all part of my portfolio. Before I start my presentation...
Please speak into the mic.
Before I before I go on with my presentation, I would just like to note that, as you can see on slide 6, that Parliament is also part of our portfolio that we are responsible for. The role of the National Treasury with regard to Parliament is different than with the other government departments. So the monitoring of the expenditure of Parliament is guided by the Parliament's own Act of the National Management of Parliament and Provincial Legislative Act. And they've got a separate committee that is responsible for the monitoring of the expenditure. So Parliament determines their own budget process. The budget of Parliament is basically finalized on a higher level than the committee that we presented here to this committee. So the process in terms of Parliament is totally different than the process we follow with the normal government department. When it comes to National Treasury, we're also responsible for the monitoring of the expenditure of the National Treasury. Public finance is playing a very independent role with regard to the monitoring of the budget of National Treasury. We would write to the leader of the National Treasury, basically draw his attention to underspending, overspending, the quality of the reports, the requirements of the report, the same as we do with another government department. So we play a very independent role when it comes to the monitoring of the budgets of the National Treasury. I'm going to get to my presentation now. As you can, when we started off with the presentation, we focused on the roles and the responsibility of public finance. And one of the roles and responsibilities of public finance is to be responsible for the monitoring of the budgets of national departments and public entities, and also the monitoring of the in-year expenditure and advise and intervene where necessary. The budget monitoring is a very interactive process between public finance and the national government departments and also public entities. So it's not just for us receiving a report. We have meetings to discuss the reports, we give our feedback. So there is a whole process we put in before finalizing the report and submitting it to the committee. On slide 41, there is specific legislation that guides the requirements for reporting, and that relates to section 32 and 40, subsection 4 of the PFFA, and also section 7 to 9 of the DORA. And it gives you the details that need to be contained in the reporting and also the timeline of the reporting. Failure to provide this information as prescribed in the Act is not only irregular, but also constitutes grounds for sanctions under the Act. And in section 86 of the PFFA, it gives you the sanctions if the department does not comply to the requirements of the Act, and it refers to conviction to a fine or imprisonment, and also so that is the sanctions if the department doesn't comply to the requirements of the reporting requirements. The purpose why we do expenditure monitoring, I think the monitoring of financial data is an essential element in managing the performance of any spending agency. So for us, it is important to monitor expenditure to see whether it's actually complying with the performance in the different strategic plans and all performance plans. The following slide, this is the main report that we used to do the expenditure monitoring. We have a monthly report. That's the monthly in-year report. And that is the early warning report that we can identify areas that we need to highlight for departments in terms of expenditure. And then we have a quarterly report. And that report also very interactive with the department. And that report we then present to the school committee on a quarterly basis. And then we have the annual financial statements of departments. It gets analyzed by the and reviewed by the Auditor General, and then published according to the timeline in the pieces. So your financial report, annual financial report, is then published in the annual report of each department. The next slide just gives us the relevant information in the report. The information in the monthly report is the actual revenue expenditure for that month in the format determined by the National Treasury. Projections of anticipated expenditure and revenue for the remainder of the current financial year in the format determined by the National Treasury. Information on conditional grants received and actual spending against them, information on all transfers, and then any variances, material variances, and summary of actions is also then indicated in the monthly report. So the next slide is not very clear. It's just an example of the monthly report. So it basically gives you then the actual expenditure in the green, and then the projected expenditure for the rest of the year. So the expenditure that need to occur for the full year is then indicated in the report. So we focus on the actual expenditure for that particular month. If you look at the report for September, we focus on the amount of September, and you compare with the projection and the plan that was done on this. So then we then have a feedback on the monthly report. The National Treasury should, according to the National Treasury Annual Performance Plan, evaluate and respond to departments based on the data reported in section 44 of the PFMA report. When we analyze the monthly report, we ask the following questions: what has happened so far and why? How does it impact on the expenditure for the rest of the year? And what intervention strategies is necessary that need to be implemented by departments? So we do our assessment according to those questions. Then basically coming to this committee, we present the quarterly reports to the standing committee. The National Treasury submits to SCOA every 6 weeks after the end of the quarter a consolidated expenditure report on the national budget. The report provides a breakdown of the preliminary cumulative expenditure for each of the national votes, with emphasis on the most significant preliminary expenditure patterns. So we would basically say analyze the report according to the main revisions of the budget, also for programs, and we will indicate if there's over expenditure and under expenditure in each program. We also give focus to the expenditure reported per program of the national votes, as well as the items that are specifically and exclusively appropriated. Any significant issues identified through the monthly evaluation of the spending is also highlighted. Then on a monthly basis, we also have a Section 32 PFMA report. The Section 32 PFMA report requires the National Treasury within 30 days after the end of each month to publish it in the National Government Gazette. This report is not compiled by Public Finance, by the Office of the Accountant General. We also verify the information in the report and then give our input before our publication. The statement published by the National Treasury in terms of Section 32 of the PMA, so the report includes the actual expenditure for the relevant month and for the financial year to date, and then also in terms of the revenue is also indicated. So it basically gives you a summary of what happens in the National Revenue Fund. It also aligned to the report that we provide to this committee in terms of the quarterly expenditure. And then on the next slide is an example of the system to report. This is give an indication of the report is the format of the report.
Thank you. Do you want to take a bite on this one? Okay. Thank you. Can we then proceed on and get to the next session?
Okay, good afternoon, honorable members. I hope this will be the last section for you. It's been quite long. So I'm going to talk a little bit about public entities and give an example of looking at some of the financial statements of the Road Accident Fund, which is in a perilous state and needs some intervention. Chairperson, it's Mark Fletcher. I work on the health, social development, and women's departments and relevant public entities. Okay, so I'm going to talk about the public entities. I'll be trying fairly brief. They established in the public sector, but outside the public service for various strategic and business reasons and where it's considered there's a need for more operational autonomy and accountability in the delivery of specific services. In the current very tight economic climate, we probably have too many entities and might need to look at some rationalization of entities. The next slide talks about the types of public entities. So the types of public entities, all the public entities are listed in the first schedule of the PFMA. So the Schedule 1 entities are the constitutional institutions like the FFC and the Public Protector and so on. Schedule 2 are the major public entities like ESCOM, Zanel, Telecom and so on. Schedule 3 is in various parts. Part A is the national government public entities like the Road Accident Fund. In my sectors like the Medical Research Council, the National Laboratory Service, SASO and so on. Part B is national government business enterprises such as PRASA, the water boards. Part C is provincial entities, and Part D is some provincial business enterprises. So prior to Treasury putting in place some instruction notes and guidelines around this reporting, accounting officers had to report, but these reports were not in a very standardized way. And it made it quite difficult to compare different sets of submissions. And these submissions were often fragmented with no formal in-year and quarterly reporting processes. This left a gap in periodic monitoring of these entities, of their performance to enable informed budget decisions. At the same time, SARB and Stats South Africa had separate systems to collect data to further fragment the information. So the reporting requirements for entities are that they must report within 30 days after the end of each quarter. They must submit their quarterly reports in the prescribed templates to the executive authorities as well as to the Treasury. The accuracy and completeness of the reports must be signed off by the accounting officer or accounting authority of the entity, the Auditor General audits performance information of entities, as well as that the entities submit their budgets to Treasury during the MTEC and E&E process. And we try to report to you quarterly on some of the entities that you're interested in. And you need to kind of let us know which entities you have particular interest in at particular times. The reporting timelines are shown in the next slide. Basically, so for example, at the end of quarter one, which ends at the end of June, they have to then report to us by the end of July. And it's shown for each quarter. Water boards still follow the financial years of local government, so they report on slightly different dates as is shown below. Some of the legislation pertaining to the reporting of entities is shown on the next slide. Section 2611 of the Treasury Regulations requires this quarterly expanding to by the entities to the executive authority. Section 29.2.1 requires a shareholder compact between the relevant minister and the entity. Section 29.3.1 gives further requirements around establishing procedures for reporting in order to facilitate effective performance monitoring, evaluation, and corrective action. Sections 41F, 51F of the BFMA require accounting authorities to be responsible for submission of all reports, returns, notes, and other information to Parliament or the relevant provincial legislature, and to the relative executive authority or the treasuries may be required by the Act. Okay, Nick, I'll move to the next slide. Some of the reasons for reporting are because of a lot of concerns about the finances in some of these entities, which have received a lot of public attention, focus on poor financial management, poor audit outcomes, lack of service delivery to hold officials accountable, make better decisions, for increased scrutiny of information through financial statements and this quarterly reporting, to improve transparency and oversight, and to review their progress as the year goes on. Some of the other reasons include, from a data perspective, to be able to track fiscal performance, consolidate the financials across governments, in-year monitoring of revenue and spending by all the units of government, wage bill analysis, management of public sector debt, international reporting, inputs to the GDP calculations, performance reporting, assessing performance against peer-to-peer service delivery, and taking corrective action, DPME, etc. Some of the challenges that we have in reporting by public entities include, firstly, that I'm not the departments which we can check their spending on VAS or Berlin data. With entities, we don't have access to their financial systems, so we can't check their reporting. And many of them don't have budgets, program structures in the same way as departments, which sometimes makes their budgets or spending quite dense. They're not always broken up in a way that one can get the full story. And so some of them are not as clearly linked to deliverable objectives as departments. A key thing in looking at their financials is to understand that they're reporting on an accrual basis as opposed to departments which are using a modified cash basis, some of which relates to the timing of which revenue and expenses are recognized. Okay, let me go to the next slide. Some of the other, some of the issues relating to this. So for example, in accrual accounting, funds, doing capital expenditure that's not immediately recognized or the spread over the life of the asset through depreciation. Because there are quite a lot of different types of entities, service delivery entities, regulators, developmental finance institutions, social security funds, sometimes the statements can be a bit different in the way that one interprets them or the nature of the businesses is different. So there's a very huge range actually of different types of entities doing a whole range of different activities. Okay, I just want to finish with something a bit more interesting, which I think is to look at a specific problem. And to get a sense of what's going on in an entity, it's very important to look at the annual financial statements. And this shows for the Road Accident Fund three of the key statements, the income statement, balance sheet, and cash flow statement. So in the first statement here, which is the financial position of RAF, the end of this last year, this is a draft. It's not signed off financials yet. So what one sees here is the assets of RAF. It had 11 billion of assets. It was still owed 9 billion in receivables from the fuel levy. But its liabilities, if you add up its current liabilities and its non-current liabilities, were 273 billion. So it's got 11 billion of assets and 273 billion of liabilities. So what you see is its net assets or its accumulated deficit is 262 billion. And that increases from the year before, the 17-18 year, from 206 billion to 262 billion in 1 year. So it's a 60 billion deterioration in a single year in the balance sheet of the Road Accident Fund. Now, South Africa doesn't have a well-developed social security system. You know, we don't have the social security reform is supposed to bring that in place for retirement, death and disability. We don't have these. So we have these three small social security funds, the Road Accident Fund, the URF, and the Compensation Fund. But this Road Accident Fund is so unstable that it is completely throwing out our social security. It makes it very difficult to proceed with other social security reforms when you have funds in such an unstable state as this. If you look at the next slide, in fact, let me skip one slide first. So the next slide is the state of the financial performance, which is the income statement. Just let's quickly look at the slide after that, which is the cash flow statement. So if you look at what happened to RAF last year, effectively on the receipts, because the fuel levy goes up, and often the Treasury makes recommendations for approval in the fuel levy in some of the budgets, the receipts, the revenue of RAF went up from 36 billion to 41 billion. And the spending, the payments by RAF went up from 36 billion to 42 billion. All looks quite nice on the cash flow statement. And it all, you know, seems to balance fairly well. I won't go through the details near the bottom. There's a small change in net cash and cash equivalents. All looks pretty fine. But when you look at the previous statement, which is the statement of financial performance, scope back one slide, what one sees here is that this, whereas this revenue, the fuel levies, you see again there at around 40 billion. But here you see, in accrual terms, the claims expenditure is far more. So unlike the 40 billion you're seeing in cash, in accrual terms, you're seeing it being now 96 billion in accrual terms. There's various reasons for that. But one of the reasons is that they just don't have the cash to pay the bills. And that's also why, if you go back to the balance sheet, the reason why their non-current assets are so small is because people are coming to seize their assets every day. Lawyers are sending, the courts are sending people to seize their assets. So they rather lease their assets than hold the assets. So they have such a massive deficit and such an imbalance here, what you're seeing in the financial performance. So you're seeing a net deficit of 55 billion in their financial performance. Now, this is partly because of the whole way that the Road Accident Fund is structured. It's basically a solvent fund, and this is the reason also why we have the RAS Bill in Parliament, to try to create a new environment, a new legal framework for this thing. Now, there's some rumour that the RAS Bill might be withdrawn. The Department of Transport is starting to suggest this, and I would like to suggest this is one of the major instabilities in government finances. I mean, Eskom and RAF and one or two others are one of the major sources of instability. So this is something that would be very helpful if the committees focus on in the year ahead, to work with the Transport Committee to try and get some resolution to a better way forward on the Road Accident Fund. And one can see, just through looking at these three financial statements, how grossly unstable and out of balance the financials of the Road Accident Fund are. Thank you, members. I just wanted to use this as a way of showing how looking at the financials can help to quite rapidly get a sense of the financial position of some of our entities.
I think, Chair, we just need to get a list of all of the public enterprises that the Committee on Public Enterprises in Parliament doesn't look at, so we can decide which ones we are going to want reports on going forward. Just listening to this and the Road Accident Fund stuff is quite scary. I feel like I need to go back to university and take my accounting classes all over again, because usually when an entity is this bad, it files for bankruptcy. This is what we learn in accounting, but you know what I mean.
Thank you, Chair. If a question, Chair, I have in the morning. But remember, I was deliberately,
For this particular presentation.
Chair, who is who in terms of
accountability?
You have got
the minister.
I'm very deliberate, Chair. You have got the minister beside, you have got the CEO of the private sector beside. Who is who? Aren't transfers and such things actually a responsibility
of department and their relative authority, or to department just appropriate and then tend the land and are no longer responsible for what is happening in the various entities.
Thank you.
Thanks for the presentation. You, Mark, you are saying that you have got no access to the spending patterns of the SOCs. I think that's present. And the question is, why? And then you say sometimes there are activities, spending is not linked to government objectives. And again, why is that so? Why would it happen? This is an SOC, and from where I'm seated, SOCs are supposed to, because that's why they exist, to be part and parcel of what we're trying to do as government. Obviously, Honorable Salpen, for intents and purposes, RAF is insolvent. But for me, when Harold Peters would agree, this has been a perennial problem. For me, it's really good to come and report this is the status quo. But why we employ clever people like you guys? It's not just to tell us problems, but to want solutions. I'm deliberately talking to you as National Treasury, but I mean, I'm talking about everybody who's responsible for that. The RAF itself, what is the Department of Transport officials and so on, who are politicians. We employ you to come up with solutions. But again, the same entity. You are then saying to us, you hear that there's a possibility of the withdrawal of the bill. So I take it the bill was intended to try and solve some of the problems that you are talking about. But the process of getting the bill here, after it has gone through the department and so on, it then goes to cabinet. And before it comes to parliament, it would have gone to cabinet. Now, a minister just decides that now we throw what the cabinet has done. I would imagine that if that were to happen, if there was going to be a trial, it would be the cabinet to say, go and withdraw the deal. And again, they would have to get a reason which convinces the cabinet in the first place. But if you don't mind, just share with us from what you hear from the green flies. Why is the withdrawal?
So, Chair, can I have the second bite, please?
Oh, okay.
So, I just want to be a little bit cheeky here and ask.
Let me finish.
Sure, sorry.
Then, I'm just saying about this whole story around the RAF. All right, I'm saying that it's not just the RAF thing, it's not just a last year problem, or a 5 year problem, or 10 years. It has been there forever.
Yeah.
And you always come and deal with the same thing. Can do we have a solution? And I hear you talking about the bill. Is that solution going to finally resolve this problem? It's just one of the things that we do, and then after that, again, we come back and say there's this problem. You didn't say much about Eskom. And you know it's a big elephant in the room. I know that we are going to be coming up with a special appropriation. Am I right? That we're coming with that. But all obviously we're asking a lot of questions at the time. But let's ask questions to you so that you can start writing your colleagues before they come in. The debt of Eskom. 2017-2018 was 350 billion.
Mambo. When?
Huh?
When was it? When was it 400?
That's the recent one.
Because no, no. The recent one is 500.
Okay.
Yeah, but I'm then saying that around 2017, so it was 350 billion, right? And then within a year, it has exploded to 500 billion. So we'd also like to be taken on board exactly what has happened, because we thought that there were some interventions and so on, but if you are having more than 33% explosion of the debt today, what is happening? You may not be able to answer some of these things, but those are types of questions that we'll be asking when people come and make presentation to us about ESCOM. Honourable Sarugan.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just want to be a little bit cheeky and ask National Treasury, in terms of the RAF, if they looked at what how it would shore up the financial position of RAF if we stopped allowing double dipping by people of private insurance, including third-party liability and so on, from then also claiming from the RAF. Because if you have private insurance, if I had an accident tomorrow, Chair, and I'm at fault, and I hit someone, my insurance will cover my costs, as well as the claims, the liable claims of the person I've hit. And then, but then we both go to the RAF and make a claim as well. I think that's double dipping. And, you know, we need to say government services for the poor, but if you can afford private services, then you can't opt into the public system as well. I worry about a lot of double dipping that happens. Another example is free basic electricity across the country, where we give, regardless of how much money you make in your household, you'll get 100 free kilowatt hours. Now, from where I sit, if you take away my 100 free kilowatt hours, I'll pay an extra, 50, 100 grand a month in electricity. But that's fine. I can pay that. But the poor households are the ones who need to be getting it, not me. And it's the same thing with RAF. And I think there's a lot of reform where we're subsidizing high and middle-income households and making these things universal. Well, universal sounds populist, but it actually doesn't. It leads to situations like this, where if I have an accident tomorrow, I'll claim for my private insurance and I'll claim for the RAF, and I will get double the funding. And that is, I share the socially, that is unfair.
Thank you, Chairperson. In my previous life, I was responsible for tabling the bill that is related to the RAS, which is the Road Accident Benefit Scheme. And I'm feeling so down now that you are saying it is being withdrawn. And I'm happy to hear Honorable Zambel speak like this, because if it goes through and he says this would be really music to the ears of many who are actually advocates of the rest. But I was not going to speak about that, Jefferson. My question was related to, or just an input related to, if you look at the picture of the road accident fund and also the other examples that you could make of the challenges that the Treasury and the sector departments are facing, like your ESCOM issues, your FAA and all those others, I would believe that it will also be of benefit to this committee if National Treasury can bring to us a presentation of a model SOE in South Africa. You know, not even a model. Those that are doing far better than those that are in the public space being shown as to be having this particular problem. Because from our side, it would then help us to look at what is it, what are the challenges, and what is the good and best practices that this one has, as opposed to what the other ones have. So that you can then be able to say, when engaging, is there no some kind of benchmarking exercises, sharing of information, the platforms that I would believe a National Treasury needs to create for our SOEs and our agencies to be able to share some of their examples on how they are able to deal with these challenges. One of the key things, if I have to go back to the RAF issue, in the reform of the social security sector was actually this bill. And it means that even the decision by whoever to withdraw it is probably not even informed, or maybe it's an advantage that somebody is taking of the new ministerial environment, and not give the motivation for some of these things, and for people to understand what was the rationale. Because if we are not careful, we are gradually building a welfare state, which is, in any case, if you look at the basket of interventions that we give as the NCLS government to deal with, or to cushion, not even deal with poverty, but to cushion the impact of poverty, it's unbelievable. The things that we are raising start with the RDP house, free basic electricity, water. Some people even don't even pay for the municipal services. Then you take it to the schooling. There is no fee schools, and there's interventions through social security or social development and SASA for uniforms, but also the provinces are also making their own contributions. So if you talk about double dipping happens at different levels. If you look at the household income of people just dependent on social security, and on those who wake up every morning to go and do your those who are laborers, like for example working or the low skills, you'd actually realize that our social security intervention does not actually encourage the unemployed to go out actively to look for jobs. So I think there's something that needs to be looked at. And the many years ago, there was a task that was given to National Treasury to say, can National Treasury, and Chairperson, during lunch, you said something that is very fundamental, which is the inability of National Treasury to communicate to the public the things that are happening. National Treasury was expected, and I think there was a Netflix decision during the MYPG process in 2009-2008, with the hullabaloo of the electricity being most expensive and not being expensive and all those type of things. There was, at that time, a decision to say, can National Treasury show us the basket of interventions that are there? It was a call from COSATU and the other social partners in NECTEC. And I think that never happened, because, and up until today, there are people who just don't sit and look at what this government is doing to deal with this challenge of poverty alleviation or poverty reduction or whatever. And if you look at, you have to get out of South Africa to be made aware by other politicians from other countries that in actual fact, umlandi kuba in South Africa. That is why the inflow of many people from other parts of the continent and elsewhere in the world, because it's not only from the continent, from Asia and wherever, they flock to South Africa. Primarily because they see the honeypot there. We might be here and we don't see the honeypot because it's at our feet and we just don't want to look down. And I think that is one thing that, as National Treasury, can you tell South Africans how they can sit and count their blessings? Just naming them one by one. And they will really be surprised at what the taxpayer contributes to keep that space between the nose and the mouth. You know, and I think that is one thing that would help us. So that when we talk about these interventions, is it in RAF, is it in ESCOM, there are many people out there who are actually saying National Treasury is wrong in the bailout for ESCOM and whatever. Can we go the California way one day and just wake up and there's total blackout in this country? People will realize then, and I hope that blackout happens during winter. Because I think it's important that we bring this reality down to our to the people. The other thing, there was let me leave it for another discussion one day when we deal with the bill on ESCOM. I'm going to make a note of it.
You say you wish the blackout happens in winter. It must happen during the Rugby World Cup.
Yeah.
during the Rugby World Cup, then it was...
We're here
at home. Yeah, and the Rugby World Cup is coming, will be glued on TV.
Yeah.
And then say, wow, and then you... No, no, I think the issues which have been raised, please attend to the mark, those that you can. But again, we have raised other things, those that you can't. There are national treasure issues, which we'd like you guys to deal with. If not today, some other day. If you are not responsible for that, make sure that people are responsible for those things they do. They do attend to them, and then they come and brief the committee about them.
Okay, thanks very much for the questions. So who's who in terms of accountability is obviously a very important question, given the failings we've had of accountability in recent years, and exactly what the responsibilities of the CEO are, the board are, and the minister, the executive authority. And probably we should be, and the committee should be also, you know, giving a lot of attention to strengthening governance in this arrangement, to try to rebuild accountability. I mean, I, for example, worked with SASA. SASA doesn't, for example, have a board, and that was a weakness there. So there the CEO accounted directly to the minister. It was, you know, a single minister. So it was, not having a board was a great weakness. Other bodies, the CEO, you know, reports to the board, but we haven't had a strong board, and maybe the board has not been replaced timelessly, etc. But each of the acts, besides the PFMA, each of the acts lays out specific roles for the different parties. So rather than just emphasizing the importance of this question and rebuilding governance and institutions and lines of accountability, let me leave it there. Similarly, the question about transfers, to what extent transfers are responsibilities of departments. Indeed, in most cases, the departments should be responsible for their transfers. Again, like the Department of Social Development, for example, they make transfers to SASA. But yet, we've discussed about the crisis to get someone from the department to even come to the meeting.
Yeah.
You know, it's like unbelievable. And in fact, they just got a threatened audit qualification. I think they got a qualification because the auditors are saying you're actually responsible for these transfers. So a lot of the line function departments are not taking sufficient responsibility for their transfers. Why don't we have access to the financial systems of public entities? Well, the main reason is because they have all their different systems. You know, the government departments all use the same system, and they're all connected and linked, which is a BAS system. It's a standard thing in government. So unless we found a way of compelling entities and a way of integrating all their different data, we don't have that. Totally different systems. Each entity has their own system at present. Why do some entities not spend linked to government objectives? I think it's linked to the first governance question, so I won't go more onto this. So, just a bit about the RAP and solutions. So the bill is a very important bill to get RAP completely restructured. It tries to restructure RAP more as a kind of social security entity. At the moment, because RAP pays you so late, most times it's not going to pay your acute medical bills. So you actually, if you haven't got a medical aid or somewhere paying for the doctor immediately, it might take you a year or two for RAP to pay you. So the RAP is not kind of almost meeting the needs in the acute. You know, if you're lucky, you can claim, you know, you'll be paid back in 2 or 3 years if you're lucky. So, RAP, to the new bill, for example, it focuses the benefits of RAP on acute healthcare provision and other things. It tries to take the lawyers out of the thing. It tries to cap the loss of income benefits. It tries to put schedules in place for like if you lose a leg, this is what the prescription is. So you don't have every court describe it, you know, doing a different value for that. So it's a very, very substantive reform, the bill. But it's obviously been very strongly opposed, as the Honourable Member will know, who introduced the bill. It's been very strongly opposed by certain stakeholders who have a lot to benefit from the existing arrangements.
Who are those?
Well, I mean, I think it's obvious who they are, if you look at where the spending goes. But, you know, the contingency arrangements of lawyers, for example, amongst others, you know, there's a lot of incentives the way the bill is structured, the existing act is structured. So I must stress that this is just a rumour. So we don't know this, but are we just hoping this is not true? Because it's taken 10 years to get this bill into place. And, you know, some DG is trying to just rapidly just say, look, It's not a question of, it went through cabinet. The issue is with the coming of the sixth government, the bills that were not through have to be, what is the term, revived. So they have to be asked for to revive. So if they don't ask for them to be revived, they don't automatically revive. So they have to be pushed to revive. So I'd just like to ask, you know, I mean, this is something really, you know, this is, it makes it, it's not one of my members important. The whole issue of a comprehensive social security is very difficult to push forward when you've got entities like this, which are taking up so much spending they could actually cover five socials if it was done efficiently. Mm-hmm. And they inhibit the whole rollout of social security because they're just so unstable. You know, so this act is a very, very substantive amendment. It will completely change the dispensation. And that's why, you know, I would really hope this act is not just withdrawn, because the existing, there are many problems in the way the existing arrangements work. I mean, 100. So the act is a very good...
Mark, don't hope and pray. Yes, don't do that. Because your prayer may just not reach the ears that they are intended for. Do something about it if it's so critical to the fiscus.
Yeah.
So critical to the fiscus. You need to raise it. It must be raised at the highest level. It has been through cabinet and so on.
Yeah.
And we've never said this issue. So you can't go back again and so on. I don't even know it's merits and demerits, but the very fact that it went through that process. Right.
Mm.
Just make sure. When we came back, we revived the appropriations bill. Why can't other people revive their bills?
Maybe if we could just ask, because Ms. Aveni is acting and working with the Transport Department, am I right, Ms. Aveni? So maybe if we could draft a letter for our minister to the Minister of Transport asking when that act will be revived. We have to do the same on the state liability amendment bill for the claims of people who, the medical legal. That bill's also lapsed, and we're also not sure whether part of that bill is going to be revived, and that can be quite an important bill also. Okay, on the stopping the private, is there double dipping? So, you know, private insurance is normally balance of third party, so it's not exactly a double dipping, but in a sense, because, as I say, the act, you know, the existing thing doesn't pay early on. You actually have to use your own private services actually almost before you even claim. But it is true in certain other areas. You know, it might be that our subsidy arrangements need to be re-looked at. I don't want to comment specifically on electricity, but the point is taken, particularly in this economic climate. What is a model SOE? So assets and liabilities does most of our running of SOE. So I mean, I think that particularly around ESCOM, I mean, I'm not sure if any of my colleagues who work with ESCOM are bold enough to talk about ESCOM today, but maybe that should be a separate discussion. But particularly led by our assets and liability team who oversee ESCOM. But obviously I'm also very worried about it. The social security reforms are in NEDNAC, but they're really hardly proceeding. And it's partly the reason that they're hardly proceeding is partly because we can't afford them, because some of the problems in entities like this, because of, you know, okay. And then I hear the questions about is the welfare state becoming unaffordable? Are we double dipping in it, not encouraging job seeking? Can Treasury lay out more clearly in the budget documentation the good basket of services that people are getting, the blessings and so on? There is some interest in re-looking at conditionalities in the social grants. I'm actually very worried that the person who runs social grants in National Treasury, that because of the very terrible fiscal situation, that government wants to make huge cuts in the budget next year, up to 100 billion cuts, which obviously Parliament would have to approve. And some people are suggesting that social grants should not get an increase next year, which means that old age pensions would not get an increase, young children would not get an increase. Now, that in my mind is not a good solution to the problem. There are many other solutions that should be considered, which are more along the lines of some of the suggestions that you're making, looking at... you know, who should be eligible, and all other kinds of reforms, conditionalities possibly. But simply not giving an inflationary increase to everybody, I'm very skeptical of that as a reform. I've tried to answer most of the questions, Chair.
Chair, just one question.
on public entities. So this team is limited to reporting to the entities that appropriated funds in the appropriation bill.
Okay.
So on slide 6 and 7, we list all the entities that we are responsible for. So the list that you are looking for is presented in those two slides. However, there is nothing that is stopping the committee to request ALM to come and present on other SOCs, but the powers or the committee can only influence those entities where funding is appropriated and it's in the appropriation bill. Because ESCOM is now a special appropriation, it's also coming here, and it's only coming here because the funds are appropriated from the National Revenue Fund. So if you have an entity like Transnet where it doesn't receive any funding from the fiscus, we won't be able to report on it. So this is the list. As I said in the first meeting when we met, is that the previous committee did ask for specific entities, but please, honorable members, just have a look at the list. If there's ones that we think should form part of the list, we will obviously put them in. But if there's ones that you think we should add, we will definitely add those. We will be guided by you in terms of what we do. And Chairperson, you know, the difficulty in working for the Treasury is that while you have an oversight role and you should report to Parliament, you still have departments within a state.
Mm-hmm.
So the solutions that we propose, even if I have a personal solution, at the end, you know, Cabinet makes a decision, and whatever decision it is, that becomes the National Treasury view, because that's
mm-hmm.
the state view. But we'll do the best we can in the quarterly meetings to give you updates of these things, to tell you that these are the interventions that we have done, and we think that we've reached a point where it's difficult for us to push, so can you help us in speaking to the department? And we always come when you call the departments for support when they come here. So that would be our request, because we feel that it's very difficult to work, because as we were trying to explain the role, the department will tell you, but that's not your business. You know, you're not the accounting officer. You Treasury, just give us the money and that's it. Which is not true. I mean, we have a mandate too, but most of the time you just tell us, we don't report to you. The PSMA says I'm the accounting officer. So usually when we ask Parliament, we basically come here to say, hey, we tried so many things, it's not working out, so can you just help us in trying to get this thing sorted? So I think, you know, Chairperson, we're going to have several of those, and we would really appreciate the assistance. But it's not, I'm not saying that we're not going to intervene or we're not going to do our jobs. When we bring it to the committee, you must know that we did most of the things and we're struggling to get any movement. But that's it. I think we can just go to the last slide, or you want us to respond?
Honourable Member, the library has the responsibilities for the accounting officer in the PSMA for public entities. It's called the responsibility of the accounting authority. And the accounting authority can be the board, if the entity has a board, or it's the CEO. And it's almost exactly the same as the accounting officer's responsibility. And then there's also the responsibility of the executive authority. And so Mark is correct, there's something not working out right sometimes between the board and the CEO, or the board and the minister. And that's very difficult to try and kind of do in a technical way that we do. So we chose 16 public entities, which is one from each of us, because we wanted to be fair, and then the big ones, so the UIF, Comp Fund, VAT, STAR, NSFAS. But I think I want you to ask me to come to the boxing there's some light humor there. If you look on that list, I want to just point that a little bit. I have 61 public entities in my portfolio. But it's every museum, it's every playhouse, the small ones, but every one of them, the PMA applies to them too. So, and Chair, if you told us that you wanted them all to be in the system, oh, that's a lot of money that you're going to have to spend to bring all the entities into the IFMS, is what we were waiting for. Our, for the public entities, it's a long and torturous process to get everybody to define the expenditures in the same way. So for departments, we've got that, but not for public entities, which makes us more important.
Thank you. Before you proceed, the revival of the bill that we spoke about, RAF 1, when you write, whoever writing to, just say that the committee replied to me briefly and updated on that one, because it was direct impact on what we are doing here. So, then we'll get to know what exactly the status is. So you can name drop.
if you
wish, yeah. But I just wanted to comment on this one, that the ones that you don't appropriate money to, we don't have view of them. That's well and good. But how do you know that tomorrow they're not coming to us? That's the problem. We only get to know about them when they're in serious trouble. So I think we should find a way of even if it's not this coming, that you should have some way of, so that you are able to detect when these problems are. You understand the genesis of these problems, because you don't want, just when they come, boom, then you must come and get the special appropriations, they must get money from us, and so on and so forth. So I just wanted to say they may be out of sight or maybe blindsided on them, but it doesn't mean that there are no problems that we haven't planned for. I just thought, let me mention that and can then proceed. Colleagues, as you, when it comes to the SOCs, I think it's known now that the biggest red flag in the country that's emanating from them. So I think every committee in Parliament would really want to know what's happening. So please bring agent and his team to come and brief us about some of the areas that he's responsible for. Okay.
So I was just saying that this team, not that it's not possible. So if you instruct us to say every quarter when you come in, you bring these SOCs and you bring these entities, there will be two teams who come, we will do this part and the team will do the other. So basically all we need is the list, and then we will ask the team that you need to respond, this is the request of the committee, come with us and then we do the presentation. So if that is definitely possible. I think we can take the last one, Peter.
I'm Mr. Vini Mugeni from Public Finance. I'm sending in for Olriga Pretend, responsible for Department Urban Development and Infrastructure. So department like energy, transport, cooperative governance and traditional affairs, water and sanitation and human settlement and communication. My task is to I just want to start on a very light note. You say you see that I only have one slide. And it is quite deliberate, because I think I'm the last born of the team. Yes, and I'm 18. So, if you take the principles of budgeting, you can say we do share the slides of the party with everybody, but it shows that priorities of government are not equal. But we do get some allocation to everybody. And in principles of prudent financial management, if you think about fruitless and wasteful expenditure, I can't just come here and go home without seeing anything.
Okay.
So I will talk on ways to, so given what has been spoken about since morning around the roles and responsibilities with us, what all that, my role is to say, how do we ensure that in the performance of your legislative role, you are strengthened to do that? I mean, an interesting issue came out in the discussion around how would we feel if you amend that. If you look at literature on legislative oversight, the world over, it talks exactly about that issue. And the first issue that comes out is to say, if legislature, for example, let's say you reject the budget. If you reject the budget, it becomes an issue which maybe I shouldn't delve into because it's political. It shows, it talks about issues of confidence on the executive. But in terms of your role, given the act that establishes you, it's good, literature says it's good when you are not a rubber stamping oversight body. Because you need to be a reading oversight body, you need to be a drafting oversight body rather than a rubber stamping body. So amendments would show us that you do engage with the proposals of budgeting that are submitted to Parliament, and you do make decisions that are beneficial to the country. To get to the slide, what we're proposing, the first one is that because we have around over 40 votes in the country, we propose that it would be prudent to divide the four members. So let's say one is responsible for about four or five departments in the 42 that we're talking about, so that there's a focused kind of approach in that in dealing with the issues of those departments. And it can be on a rotational basis, whether it's quarterly, whether it's 6 months, so that there is a focused approach on the oversight role that you have to play. We think that will add a lot of value, but surely there will also have to be more engagement with the relevant committees that are responsible for those departments. I mean, if you listen to some of the issues that came out now, are exactly the policy issues that play themselves out in the portfolio committee. It means that SCOA will have to have a very strong relationship with the portfolio committees that are dealing with those departments in order to perform your oversight role on the finances. And I think you already have those kind of relations established. I still recall with the previous SCOA, that kind of relationship was already there. SCOA could even be invited to come and sit in portfolio committees, and I think it also went the other way around. It does work in that regard. And you find it the world over around the literature of legislative oversight. So we are just saying through a focused approach, we think that it can be beneficial to the members. And then when you look at that as well, you want to talk about committees like SCOPA and the linkages with the auditing profession or the auditor general, because that's the body that can also provide more value to SCOPA around the issues of the legality of spending and also the propriety of spending, but also on the efficiency and effectiveness of spending, because they do performance reports that shows around how departments are performing on the set targets. So the interrogation of their documents and direct engagement with them, either through SCOPA or directly, I think it can also add value to the work that you are doing. So it also talks to issues of reading more documents like annual reports, engaging with them, asking a lot of questions on that. And also, as alluded to earlier by my colleagues, those documents are discussed at length in those relevant committees. and that relationship is always important. And perhaps also at the technical level, the resources or the assistants, the committee researchers who assist at OPA and the relevant committees can also link up around the kind of issues that are relevant for SCOVA and the relevant committees in order to ensure that what they bring to you is in sync and it does deliver the relevant impact. I mean, when we talk about, I think the issue around portfolio committees, which is the third bullet there, is what I've also mixed when I talked to the first issues. But we're saying the departments that are that you are overseeing, direct engagement with them on key kind of spending issues, they can also come here and account. This is over and above that report that you have on the expenditure report on the quarterly performance that we give to you. They understand more from them what the issues are. Try and compare if these issues that we are telling you in our reports are linking with what they are saying. And if there are discrepancies, you need to be asking a lot of questions to say what is happening here. Because Treasury is reporting this and you are reporting this. Try to test the ground to see the validity of the information and the reasoning behind it as well. On the legislative oversight instrument, which talks to that bullet on parliamentary budget office and committee researchers, I think it is basically impossible for you to perform your role if you don't have strengthened resources to support you, particularly based on research, because the space in which you operate is data intensive. You have to be doing a lot of research. In some instances, the research has to be scientific, so modeling and things like that. So I would need the parliamentary budget office to support you in the forecast that they do, the reports that they do. Your research was here, was asking questions earlier about data and all that. I can already see movement towards a positive direction in wanting to produce tangible reports for you. But you will have to be capacitated by research. And it can also be research documents produced by other institutions, which you can also pull out from the web yourself, IMF, Monetary Fund, just to keep up to date with reform and discourse around legislative oversight. Then the issue around public participation on spending issues, I know that time and again you also do your own, other than the public participation activities of Parliament where people come in and sit and participate, you also do your own, you call them oversight visits, where you go and engage with the public, where you go and oversee projects that we spoke about here. But I think what I've seen kind of lacking in that is you do go and assess and you make recommendations around what you have seen. But I'm yet to see the follow-ups and implementation of the resolutions that you adopt in those reports. So I think if you might try and strengthen and implement your own resolutions that you take on oversight and follow them through in terms of what happened. Lastly, what I wanted to add was the issue of that the point of entry, because there was an issue that you raised about the point of entry to say, when do you enter? For me, I think this is an interactive process, as I've already said. You read full staff reports that are presented here, you engage with everyone who comes here. So you are already involved throughout the process. And through the reports that we give you, you can already formulate opinions and observations about certain boards and departments, which can inform you when you eventually make those decisions around whether to approve a budget or not. The issue around the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation. It also links with what I said around performance information. And Randhani indicated that this is the role that they play. They do performance evaluation reports, which you can also use to see what happens in the departments that are there. But call them in so that they can also account around what they are doing in that role as DPMB, and the value that they add to the entire process of budgeting and oversight. Because that one links very well with your mandate around the set kind of KPIs, key performance indicators and areas, and how the effectiveness of those, because we want to assess the effectiveness of KPIs that departments set for themselves. So Chair, that's where I would like to leave it and just indicate that there is what we call a kind of proactive oversight and what we call ex post oversight. And it's essential that you are active in those two spaces, because when you focus on one and not the other, you are always out of one. And you find what I'm talking about in the literature of legislative oversight, which you can even browse and read more on a daily basis to improve your role as a parliamentarian. Thank you.
Okay.
I just want to check this on the possible ways to make the oversight work on the score efficient. The recommendation, I just want to become practical. If each and every one of us now want to have a research, how practical is that? Each and every one of us. I just want to make because I see well, here you say at least each one of us can be allocated 5. But at the same time, you are suggesting that it will be more workable if we're having a PBO, for instance, and the research. Do you mean that each and every person should be allocated that? And what is the practicality of that? Were you referring to this committee that already has a research over and above?
Maybe let's see if there are others here.
Another take. Okay. I don't know whether I missed your response. I'm not necessarily on yours. I spoke about the biggest. I think the biggest risk that we are having is the lack of project managers, which results in all types of things and so on. And then I said, and we have always raised it in many fora, and then particularly asked whether the School of Government staff teach this thing. And then I made a proposal that perhaps it's an area where we say we just massify that area, get people, we train them, we put them, and so on, we pay, because I'm sure we'll get a lot of return in that investment. And you don't wait for the different departments to do that, and you take it as your responsibility. Obviously, you're not starting people, new people, you've got a lot of graduates there that you can put somewhere, get people up who specialize on these things. That also talks to even our monitoring. If you look at big infrastructure projects, either government or SOCs, we don't just overshoot the budget, perhaps by 10% or 20%. We sort of double the budget, and you must look at the Transnet pipeline, where we ended. Look at the Gautrain, where we ended. Now we know what happened with the. With this data 2010, the list is endless. Just in monitoring and make sure that it goes to
contract management, right? Contract management, the type of contract that we go to. You know, contracts that I've seen, you can see that we just don't have control over there. There are so many moving targets there as far as the provider of the service is concerned, right? Having so many variables tell you that when the exchange rate changes, we may revisit what he said. And definitely the exchange rate is going to change. So he knows that. But when he came in for a stand that you are to the PFA thing, that the 90-10 rule, the price is so important. So sort of that's supposed to be such a strong thing because you get a project based on price. But they come in, people charge us as far as the proposal is concerned, but before you know, end of the project, you are done paying. So I'm just saying, so that we identify these things which have put the whole fiscal set at risk. Infrastructure projects, I can tell you, they end up about double the price that the people came into. So I'm just saying, those things, those keys that are so critical in us, so that you don't just leave it to these people, because they affect what you are responsible for. Make sure that at least you put these people under one roof, you throw the key out, you train them there. By the time they come out, at least you know that each department is having about 5 people who can do that. We'll save a lot of money. That will be a worthwhile investment. So I'm throwing it in. It's something that we need to consider even in the meetings, as executives say. What do we do? It's not a surprise. 2, I think there is an error that if you so deem, that we can even write to the Minister of Public Affairs and Administration. Because I think it's also very important for the school falls under that, am I right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that we are also pointing out that we have identified this as the biggest risk and would like them to consider that and come and report to us. But can I allow you to respond and anybody? I think you can, the colleagues can have a second bite. We have raised so many things. We are the last ones to speak.
Okay. Thanks, Chair. I think for me, it was just a kind of speaking kind of question around what the list of indicated that the chart for each focus group. That's not what I'm saying. We are saying we already have researchers, there's already a parliamentary budget office. But we need to assess the efficiency of the resources that we have. Are they capacitating us as we would like? And we are saying there's room to improve. As the researcher was indicating today, they need a lot of data to work with and all that. So I'm also aiming to say, in capacitating you, they can go further and look at the kind of modeling and evidence kind of budgeting that other legislatures and their researchers are doing the world over. So it's the resources that you have, but using them in a way that enables you to play that over the role that you want. And you will be able to answer that question that you asked about how would we feel if you amend the budget or not. But because you'll be having proper resources, I'm not saying that you have proper now. I'm saying because you have been in-depth kind of analysis and reports that you get, it offers you with a wide range of variables around the reports that informs your work. And lastly, maybe Chair, as we are taking a bite on the issue that you are raising, I have to indicate that honorable member. I think on the issue of it's the issue of capacity and project management that you are raising. For us who are operating in the infrastructure space, I would say it's one of the biggest risks that we are also identifying as we also doing the budget process. And I'm happy that we are also seeing it from your side. I think from Treasury's perspective, as we are raising the issues today, we need to think about, even if it's investing in a program or crafting a program that addresses those issues, and it could be beneficial to the country as a whole. I mean, there's already an initiative in local government around the review of local government, because you would understand that that's a fear that it's in a conflict. But we do have those challenges in provinces. We do have those provinces, certainly in national. And we need to address it across the board in government. So it's a point well made and a point well taken.
I suppose we suggested that first bullet. If you look at the book, that's 40 odd votes. Okay, how many members do you have in the committee? So then, if one takes four, and that becomes your speciality here. You read all the other statistics as well, but then you can really give us grief. And those departments that are you want to look at it. Otherwise it means everybody looks at all 40. So that was the only way. So it's much like we all arrange the six of us each have a portfolio. It doesn't mean that I don't know about health and social development group for these, but the other two colleagues obviously know a lot more. So that's how we arrange because the committee could replicate us in their work.
Also just wanted to address the question that Chairperson has raised around project management. So the National School of Government does have a course on project management, but with the National School of Government, we've also always questioned the quality of the training courses and also the impact of the training courses, because a lot of public servants go through the courses, but we don't know whether it was successful and whether they can learn the skills they can implement in different departments. What seems to work is that when there's a big project in government, say, and I saw it was the inauguration of the president, that if there's a pool of project management in the different departments, that for big projects, that those people with the skills can be seconded, say, to the presidency, and they work in a project management team for the period of the federal inauguration. And that works quite well with a large inauguration project.
Chairperson, I just wanted to say the rest of the slide. You remember when we came to present the first time, we were using acronyms. Very complicated words. So what we did was we took all of them out of the presentation and we put them under the doorway and we added the meaning. So we thought that would make it easy for us when you look at the presentation themselves. And I think just to summarize from what was taken from the committee is that one, you need more briefing on the debt, especially how what is going on in the debt, how is the estimate of the debt and the cost. So we need to ask the team to come in briefly on that, and the same thing that do with the SOC. So we will definitely speak to them. We will liaise with them and on how we do the formalities. And the bills that were, you know, stopped in the previous administration, we need to also follow up and make sure that those are revised, especially if these are the deals that are going to help us with the large liabilities that we get, especially with the RAF. And we're going to also ask the Intergovernmental Relations team to come and explain the budgeting and the processes that they follow to allocate funds for the processes in the local government. And also what I think is important, especially for me as the Minister to the official, is that we need to communicate this. I think that's our view something, but I think that is our take. Yes, the skills, especially in project management. So Gillian and we will have to figure out how we can make it right. Because you know, Chairperson, we have a lot of training programs. The one that is going to come to the committee is the War on Leaks from the Department of Water and Sanitation. So it was meant to be a project that are still in dealing with the water leakages, but at the end it's becoming a liability. So the question is, yes, there are funds that we provide or the funds that are available to the trainer, but what is the impact competency training. Do these people that we take the training, are they doing what they're supposed to be training? And most of the time we find that the intention was good, but the outcome is not as what was intended. So definitely look and deal with the skills in the program.
Thank you so much. One of the things that I don't know what we have done along the way, we've got so many of these institutions, whether they are technical colleges or whatever, and so on, which we are supposed to be. That's what you look at what the market needs. And this market is us, the biggest market is us as government, not even the private sector. We need this and so on. So we might not have provided you with the how part of it. I think we've just raised this is an issue that we need to address. And whether through the School of Government and so on, but there are so many of these academic institutions which are put in certain areas, including your university. I don't know what type of alumni they are, because and you are closer to them. These things where you get that's what used to happen. The old school us for different diseases. We NC identified a number of us for different things, and we have posted all over the world to say go and look how they do it and so on and so forth, and you get the type of training. The people who are sent for public transport in the economics and so on and so forth. It may be an expensive way of doing it, but get people who are going to get this to get our people to do this thing. You'll identify those kids and so on and find the best way of doing it. Because again, it shouldn't just be a ritual that oh, we went to the School of Government and so on. As you are saying, this is supposed to be an investment in human capital. And if it's an investment, what type of a return are you getting? And if we don't get a return, it means it was a wasteful expenditure. We may as well call it that. Why are you things which are going to be impactful? As you know, and I would say to the honourable members that I've looked at this. I think it's going to help. Whenever we come to this type of thing, please bring this to help the first step that Dr. Mampo made about the closer at the back, so that we are able to pick up on these things. But again, to understand what the expectations are from us, I think it's very comprehensive. Yeah. So I would say in my five, please always have that as we come to this meeting. I think it's a well prepared document, and it really helps us. Speak on behalf of the honourable members and to National Treasury team, I said at the beginning, please see us as part of your team and playing different roles and so on. We are all concerned about service delivery, the impact that we are making to the lives of our people who are in the same trench and so on, different roles. And then we'll ask questions, difficult questions and so on, but those things will be meant to try and make us all look better, because at the end of the day, it's government. Our people don't care about members of parliament, about officials or about the executive. If we're not delivering, government is not delivering, full stop. So you can't go out and say, no, as an executive team we've done that, but these parliamentarians are not doing their work, and vice versa. So that's why I was saying that I see us as part of the same team. But thank you very much. We'll continue engaging and planning us if the chairperson ends up asking some stupid questions. I think that it's fine. I'm trying to get to know the things that you do. And who deals with the rating agencies now? Okay. when Comrade Malus was still in the Minister of Finance, there's nothing that once she started seeing Dr. Mampo, said, don't tell me about rating agencies, because she'd be saying that Minister Standard & Poor wants to talk to you. So she's no longer in that. So it's Judith now. Yes. Okay. Honorable Peters, she was whispering to my ear, just saying that how impressive she is. She was going to say that herself, but now that she told me, I think I'll communicate that in a number of ways. Obviously, you know what you are talking about. I know you know what you are talking about, but that's what the impression that they are getting. But again, it represents South Africa. How you deal with these things. And again, it goes back to the same thing that most of the good things that you don't communicate them. I always say it's like lighting a candle and putting it under the table. And for us to see the light, we must just put it under the table and start seeing the light. Honourable members, thank you very much for these members have been here since the beginning of the week, and they get in the morning and so on. And I was talking to some honourable members, so they came for a 2-hour meeting today. Then they're going back, and you guys, please supply us with the information that we've requested. Thank you very much. Until we are meeting next week, yeah, we are meeting at Tuesday, and we're looking forward to seeing you again. Thank you very much. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you.
I can tell you a story.